knowledge fight.
Dan and Jordan, I am sweating.
KnowledgeFight.com.
It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Andy in
Stop it.
Andy in Kansas.
Andy.
It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan.
I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are, Dan.
Indeed.
Dan?
Yes, sir.
Quick question.
Jordan.
What's your bright spot today?
My bright spot today, Jordan, I had a realization that I've been listening to a fair amount of some podcasts for entertainment.
Sure.
Decompressing that high stress week or so.
Uh-huh.
And I realized that one of the things that I really gravitate towards, there's a through line through a lot of them.
Uh-huh.
And that is Matt Gourley.
Matt Gourley's great.
I think he adds so much to a podcast.
He's
and,
great.
His vibe is so gentle and friendly.
Underrated.
And really, as a counterweight to my listening to Alex Jones all the time.
Sure.
It really feels like that's like a balm that I can...
Yeah.
Matt Gourley's a balm I can put on my
Matt Gourley's a classic glue guy. You
mm-hmm.
know, he's like a Phil Hartman. He's yep. got that Dave Foley kind of like straight man energy to him, but he's also incredibly hilarious.
Very sharp.
Really,
super
really
funny.
Good.
And also, I want to try and exploit my platform to now be like, if we're big
hey,
enough.
Matt Gourley.
Hit
get
me
a,
up.
Get over here. Yeah. Come on, Matt Gourley. Come
hit
on now.
Hit a player up, Matt Gourley.
I like it.
Let's see
like
if that
it.
Works.
Let's abuse our privileges.
Yes, let's see. Jordan, how about you? What's your
right spot? Dan, I have the rare double blights. Double blight spot.
Blight spot.
Double blight spot. No, the inverse of uh-huh. double blight spot. The double bright spot. That's a follow-up to two bright spots.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is
yeah.
unprecedented.
First, we're going to go in chronological order. If you'll recall, Dan, a while back, I told you about a pear that I ate.
Sure.
It was a delicious pear.
Oh, I got some pears for you in the other room, by the
of
way.
Of course. I'm going to enjoy those. Mm. But my partner's moms both decided that... We got to do something for this.
Mm-hmm.
So they ordered me a pear.
Wait, they realized they had to do something about your
they
love of pears?
They had to do something about this pear thing.
Okay.
They were inspired
awesome.
Into action. So they ordered me a pear from a place that has great pears.
Sure.
To the point where I can't eat it. It looks too much like the...
It's like
a platonic...
Pear.
Yeah, it's like a platonic pear.
Uh-huh.
Where you're like, I don't know what to do with this pear. I'm going to eat it. It's going to be amazing.
Yeah, of course you're going to eat it. You got to.
And then you'll recall that I said something about how my brain was functioning.
Yeah.
And Black Dragon Queen Christy sent me an incredibly kind
artistic
card.
Pear.
Yeah, well, I wish it was a pear. Always. All things should
nice.
Be pears. But she really touched me. And
Aww.
It was very kind of her.
That
so,
is great.
Double bright spot.
Hey. Oh, things are
good
looking
stuff.
Real bright.
It's
and I actually got to say, I may have another bright spot.
Oh, no.
And that if you're going with two, I'm going to give another
We're
going
to do a quadruple bright spot?
I may. And that is that I really got into today's episode.
Uh-huh.
Like
you did.
You know, it's an Easter miracle. I found something. I was not expecting Alex to be at all like, kind of like, oh, I can talk about this. This is interesting.
So you would say that Alex has risen.
He's risen indeed.
He's risen indeed.
And we will get down to business on all that. But before
right.
we do, Jordan, let's take a little moment to say thank you to some new wonks.
Oh, that's not a bad idea at
so
all.
So first, Scroton the Strong. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thanks, Scroton.
Thank you. Next, Melissa K. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much, Melissa.
Thank you. Next, oh, man, I remember when I first realized that Missy was short for Melissa. It's a weird day. Anyway, sorry, Melissa. Next, Trek with Tyler. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much, TWT.
Thank you. Next, Owen, but not the dumb one. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much. There are a surprising number of competitions
Schroyer,
for a dumb
Benjamin.
Owen. Yeah, I was going to say.
Next, Kathleen Y. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Thank you. Next, pretty quick for a Canadian. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Pretty quick.
And we got a couple of special things going on here. Ooh. over the weekend.
All right.
Hit a couple birthdays.
Well,
that,
of course.
I'd like to give a little shout out
it's
to.
It's our April birthday shout out that we're going to do probably three or four more times this one.
First, Alexander reached out, wanted to wish Iris a happy birthday.
Oh, well, happy birthday, Iris.
Happy birthday, Iris.
Yeah, of course.
Hope you have a good one, or had a good one, I guess, because since this is coming out probably after your birthday.
Don't worry about it.
It's the weekend.
Deal with it, Iris.
Now, this next one's very special. It goes out to a cat.
Okay.
It was a birthday cat.
Well, then that we do birthday cats yes. on command.
Yes.
On command. Yeah, no birthday month for cats.
That's the loophole.
Yeah, exactly.
And,
and
this is a cat named Pleiades.
Oh, well,
how
shit.
How do you not wish Pleiades the cat a happy birthday?
I don't know, because the light from Pleiades takes several 100,000 years to get to us.
Well, it just got here.
Okay.
Happy birthday.
Nicely done.
So, Jordan, today we're going to be going over April 1st through 3rd, 2021 Blackjack.
Ah, I never had a chance on that one.
I really sped
you
up.
You were too good
through
for
the
that
home
one.
Stretch.
Yeah.
So this is Thursday and Friday of last week, and then Saturday, Alex fucked around and went into studio and recorded a special thing.
Oh, sure. Why not?
And once we get going, you'll understand why I had to cover that Saturday
thing. Of course.
But first, here's an out-of-context drop from today's show.
The devil ain't cool, man. He's not what gives you the hot cheerleaders and the partying and the fun.
Oh.
Actually, I thought that was I thought that's what he specifically tried to tempt you
every
with.
Every depiction in media.
I was going to say, he's the one who gets you that stuff.
Yes.
God is the one who gets you eternal happiness
yes.
by foregoing those specific things.
Yep, that's always been my understanding. Every chick tract that I've ever seen.
Almost entirely like, hey, that hot girl, you got to avoid
and
her.
And the fun and the partying.
It's terrifying.
Yeah.
Don't do the fun and the partying. Jesus hates it.
Yeah. So, my man.
Yeah.
I want to preface this really quick.
Sure.
I
want to
set this up.
All right.
This April 1st episode, if it was an April Fool's episode, I would admire the hell out of it. Because there's a number of things that go on that you could interpret as being like, yeah, he's fucking around.
Sure, but it's not.
Like this. This could be an April Fool's gag.
And I've been doing a lot of studying the last few weeks on a particular subject that Rob Dew brought to my attention and that the rest of the crew kept basically pestering me about, and I finally last night and today read it, and it is the smoking gun of smoking guns of smoking guns.
This is green eggs
and
ham.
I'm the type of guy that always gets on air, and I tell you, next hour I'm going to cover this big story, and then I'll start telling you what the big story is right away.
Right.
You know, the tactic in media is to say coming up so you keep listening. I don't do that.
I'm bad at my job.
Time, if you just put out the big news and don't have some fanfare, like a 20th Century Fox intro.
Not how it goes.
A ripoff of old British newsreels. People don't care, and it just becomes part of the background ambient noise, and yet they actually get conditioned to the tyranny. You actually become a tool of evil. You know, I almost should just go off air for a month and just shut InfoWars down. And then if I came back and covered this, we might be able to save the planet.
I hate you so much.
You see what I mean?
April Fools.
I hate you so much. That should have ended with, should I be saying any of this?
Mm.
Perhaps not.
I have the gun, the smoking gun to end all smoking guns. And
see you in a month, assholes.
Yeah, I'm going to disappear for
a while.
This
is your fault. You don't get this smoking gun.
So that's an interesting idea for Alex. The idea of like disappearing like he's Sting going
to
the rafters.
Sure.
Not fighting for WCW or NWO.
If you love something, let it go.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
I do like the idea of Alex coming back with just face paint, crow face paint. A brooding Alex Jones.
I'm Bruce Lee's grandson.
So he doesn't disappear for a month, but he does do what I would say is the next best thing.
What if I told you I have the document from John Hopkins where they planned the whole attack, planned the SARS attack, planned the Ebola attack, planned the COVID-19 attack, and then have a plan through vaccines to brain damage you and give you Alzheimer's and sterilize you, and then how they're even going to blame the politicians and how they even set up President Trump to do it.
I would be interested in that.
Imagine having that smoking gun.
I'm imagining it.
In your hand.
Mail it to me.
Word for word, admitting the whole thing. And then you'd ask, why would they write such a thing? Well, I know why. I can explain it. But you know what? I'm not going to cover it. I'm going to put together graphics. And I'm going to pull all the different pieces together. And I'm going to come in here Saturday. And I'm going to tape for 1 hour at noon. Make sure it's all perfect.
Yeah.
And then at 2 p.m. Central, we should have it ready. Okay. We will stream it back to back, hour after hour, until I go live Sunday on Easter at 4 p.m. Central Standard Time, as I always do on Sundays.
What a dick. That's amazing. I've got smoking gun proof, but I'm not gonna talk about it. Not until Sunday.
That's some Dom sub shit. I can't handle that. No. I'm not into this type of relationship, yeah. Dad. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately for me, I was like, wow. That is ridiculous.
You can come on Saturday.
That kind of presentation is ridiculous. It's, if you're listening in the audience, you have to ask yourself, why?
What kind of real person
possible
would do
this? News organization would be like, we have proof of everything that is going on and they're trying to kill everybody. We're going to wait 2 days to reveal it to you.
And you know what? And news organizations do wait with information that they're not 100.
They don't tease it like
this,
though.
But they don't go, like, the New York Times doesn't have, like, a, hey, man, we got some bombshell shit. We're going to see it in a couple weeks.
We're working on something that will...
This will change the game.
No. Dumb.
Absolutely not.
So the document that Alex is talking about is a 2017 scenario exercise called the SPARS Pandemic 2025 to 2028, futuristic scenario for public health risk communicators.
Wow, that sounds like the smoking gun.
This document is essentially very similar in structure to the Rockefeller one Alex erroneously calls Operation Lockstep, in that the Johns Hopkins exercise began with the selection of two important variables that could dictate what challenges could arise in a possible future.
Alex real or is Alex not real?
In this exercise, the two variables were, quote, varying degrees of access to information technology and, quote, varying levels of fragmentation among social, political, religious, ideological, and cultural lines. Whereas the Rockefeller document explored all four of the possible futures that were based on the variables they chose, this document focuses instead on just the one that the preparers thought would present the most challenge in terms of medical communication.
Okay, so there are more positive simulations that could happen.
With those two variables,
right,
creating a matrix of four scenarios.
But this paper is entirely about the worst possible scenario.
Well, maybe not the worst possible scenario, because they don't lay out what the other ones are, so I don't really know what they are.
It's a real bummer of a scenario.
Well,
though.
it's a scenario that is for an exercise for medical communicators.
Okay.
And so the one that would raise the most challenges, or they decided would raise the most interesting challenges,
perfect,
is the one that they used.
Excellent. Sorry, I just wanted clarification.
Oh, no. That's an important clarification. This was the possible future that they called the echo chamber, which represented a scenario where there was widespread access to information technology and, quote, isolated and highly fragmented communities. Reading over this document, it's really fascinating how there are a number of similarities between the real world and the scenario that was laid out in this exercise. The real-world novel coronavirus was called SARS-CoV-2, whereas the scenario illness is called SPARS-CoV. Ultimately, these similarities are all things that make sense, given that the possible future was laid out by public health experts who would be trying to make as realistic a scenario as possible, so participants could best explore the communication challenges that could arise in the event of a public health emergency in a world where everyone was online and large segments of the population lived in a slightly different reality from each other.
Yeah.
One of the problems that we keep running into with these scenarios, like this document and the Rockefeller one, are that they're well-written and engaging. They contain a ton of details that flesh out the world they're trying to depict, and as such, seem like more of a prediction than they intend to be. This Johns Hopkins scenario relies on a template laid out by Jay Ogilvy and Peter Schwartz in their 2004 paper titled Plotting Your Scenarios, published by the Global Business Network. In this paper, Ogilvy and Schwartz try to help businesses and organizations understand how to best structure a scenario-based exercise in order to maximize its impact in terms of the participants being able to learn about how to deal with new circumstances and manage change.
Okay, so these guys are dungeon masters.
Yes. Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, that's what these guys do.
The strategy of using a scenario matrix is explained in this paper. This is what both the Johns Hopkins and Rockefeller exercises used, where the planners come up with a big list of key factors they think could affect the possible futures they want to explore. Then that list is whittled down to two central factors. These factors are plotted on a matrix, which could go in one of two directions, and that creates four distinct combinations of factors, each representing a scenario that can be explored.
Right.
An example that's given in this paper is about looking at possible futures for education, where they choose to use hierarchy versus participation and inclusion versus exclusion as the two main axes that were the most relevant to their exploration.
Mm-hmm.
This created four scenarios: hierarchical and inclusive, hierarchical and exclusive, participatory and inclusive, and participatory and exclusive. Each of these possible realities looks vastly different from the others, so it's not too hard to jump from there to scenario building and creating evocative narratives that characterize each of these, so participants can more easily relate to the challenges that each possible future would present.
Totally, of course.
That's exactly what Ogilvie and Schwartz discuss in their introduction to this paper. Quote, "To be an effective planning tool, scenarios should be written in the form of absorbing, convincing stories that describe a broad range of alternative futures relevant to an organization's success. Thoughtfully constructed, believable plots help managers to become deeply involved in the scenarios and perhaps gain new understanding of how their organization can manage change as a result of this experience. The more involved managers get with scenarios, the more likely it becomes that they will recognize their important but less obvious implications. Moreover, scenarios with engrossing plots can be swiftly communicated throughout the organization and will be more easily remembered by decision makers at all levels of management."
And if the CDC rolls an 18 or higher, then we defeat the pandemic.
Saving throw.
That makes perfect sense to me.
Ogilvie and Schwartz are business consultants, and this technique, using scenario-based exercises, is a very common one among organizations that want to explore how prepared they are to face potential challenges that could come up expectedly or unexpectedly.
Yeah, war games.
Yeah, these scenarios work better if they're written as compelling and engrossing stories, and as we've learned, Alex has an incredibly hard time differentiating between reality and fiction.
Yeah.
To compound the problem, these guys, they recommend that people, quote, invent catchy names for the scenarios, saying, quote, "When your managers feel the hot breath of crisis, they should be able to recall the appropriate scenario by name."
Dan, if you recall, I have suggested to scientists that they need to rename things better.
Yeah.
Now, here's the problem, though. I have also suggested they go outside of scientists for naming.
Yeah, but then Alex also talks about how, like, THX1138 or whatever is
sure.
real. That's not a catchy name.
But, I mean, we could come up with some catchier names.
Yeah, probably.
What's this one called?
This one is called the Echo Chamber.
The Echo Chamber.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll call it the Shitty Room.
Okay, all right.
You won't forget the Shitty Room.
No, that's true. That might work.
That might work.
So this technique, though, creating these names that you remember, it's a good strategy for scenario-based planning, but the flip side, like you have pointed out, is that these names could be exploited.
Oh, they're very catchy.
Very easily.
Yeah.
Lockstep is a perfect example of that. It's just a catchy scenario name, which is apparently so catchy that Alex has built a gigantic conspiracy around
it. See, now I rename it Bummertown. One, you remember it. Two, nobody's like, oh, they're using Bummertown to defeat the globalists.
It's a classic Bummertown.
This is the Bummertown scenario all over again.
Anyway, the bottom line here is that this document is none of the things Alex claims that it is, and it doesn't prove any of the shit he's pretending it does. Also, it's 89 pages long, so there's no way I believe for a second that Alex has read it.
Absolutely not.
He talks a little bit more about it here, although he said he was going to wait until Saturday.
Of course he
he actually doesn't talk much about it, because I think he actually hasn't read it at all.
Right. So he's just got no clue.
No.
Basically, anyone taking these vaccines, they're all designed to the same thing, is going to have neurological disorders within 1 year. Most of the people taking the vaccine will be dead within 10. And this John Hopkins says it all right here.
That is not in the Hopkins report.
That would be a very strange thing for Johns Hopkins to release.
Yeah, the scenario is written from the standpoint of someone who lives in 2030, so there's not even 10 years depicted in the exercise since the outbreak begins in 2025.
Sure.
Alex is just making shit up because he knows no one's going to read it, and he's got all the elements there that he needs to lie about.
Yeah, it's 89
it's great.
Pages, it's got the name,
yep.
Yeah, you're golden.
Yep.
Just riff.
So every now and again, I like to point out when Alex makes it abundantly clear that he thinks that he's fighting literal demons.
Sure.
Because everyone needs to keep that in the front of their mind.
It's really nice to recall that this man thinks he's fighting the devil.
Right. You know who authored this report? It wasn't the Center for Public Health at Johns Hopkins.
It was Lucifer the Morningstar.
You bet.
Yeah, okay.
He's a master of public health, actually. Got a degree. Honorary.
Well.
Of obviously this is not a human intelligence running this. And I just go back to that over and over again. And I tell top generals that, top former head of intelligence agencies, senators, you name it, at secret meetings, and they nod their head and agree with me. Because everybody knows.
Everybody knows.
I'm not talking about fake low-res of flying saucers here. I'm talking about interdimensional entities.
Sure.
Hell-bent to destroy us.
Naturally.
And they are influencing humans on Earth to do this. And this is not a human plan. It is a satanic fallen angel operation.
Sounds right.
I honestly might have more respect for low-res pictures of UFOs. I'd definitely rather talk to that guy than Alex.
Yeah, I would say that I am more convinced by the Loch Ness Monster photo than I am by interdimensional beings are controlling the plan that's not even happening.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
So Alex lies a little bit more about this Hopkins report,
sure.
Which again, he's not going to talk about
until
Saturday.
No, of course not.
Hell on Earth is going to be released. The total collapse is being engineered. I mean, giant John Hopkins plans that are operational. John Hopkins runs the whole thing.
I'm John Hopkins.
All spelled out. Says here, just like I surmised, by 2030.
You did not surmise.
Most of the population
shit.
Is dead or living dead, totally brain damaged, totally gone. And then we're going to have to, we won't be able to take care of people. Then the good people to survive will have to join the globalists in exterminating who's left because things will be so out of control.
Whoa. Alex is making that up.
Yeah, no. Big no. Big pass on that one.
Yeah, so here's kind of the passage that I guess most closely resembles what he's talking about.
Okay.
Quote, while the federal government appeared to have appropriately addressed concerns about the acute side effects of Coronavac, that's the vaccine,
SCARS.
SPARS.
SCARSGARD, yeah. COVID-9. Yeah.
The long-term chronic effects of the vaccine were still largely unknown. Nearing the end of 2027, reports of new neurological symptoms began to emerge. After showing no adverse side effects for nearly a year, several vaccine recipients slowly began to experience symptoms such as blurry vision, headaches, and numbness in their extremities. Due to the small number of these cases, the significance of their association with Coronavac was never determined. As of this writing in 2030, longitudinal studies initiated by the NIH at the beginning of the vaccination program have not reached the next round of data collection, so formal analysis of these symptoms has not yet been conducted. Furthermore, these cases arose from the initial cohort of vaccine recipients, those in high-risk populations, including those with underlying health conditions, making it increasingly difficult to determine the extent to which these symptoms are associated with vaccination.
Yeah, see, that's good dungeon mastering, but I would expect Alex would have added
they're
a little
all dead.
More
We're
fire.
All dead.
Yeah. Just like, they're coming.
Those of us, those of us who haven't been vaccinated will be forced to kill the rest
yeah,
of everybody.
Totally. You need a little bit of flair yeah, there. That's all I'm saying.
The imagined scenario involves a small number of possible unforeseen side effects from a vaccine that's deployed to fight the pandemic. And Alex has turned that into the clip that we just heard.
Sure.
He's claiming
sure.
that John Hopkins is saying that by 2030, everyone will be dead or walking dead.
That's a leap.
It's a complete fiction that he's just created out of thin air from his imagination. The story that he's telling literally has no connection to the primary source that he's pretending to cover.
That sounds
but
correct.
I can't wait until we get to Saturday. They had days, and it's one of the most incompetent displays that I've ever seen.
There's no way that you heard, I'm going to get to this Saturday, yeah. and weren't like, well, we're going to handle this yeah. Saturday.
That's when I'm like, all right.
All right, we'll see you then.
All right. I'm going to stretch.
Yeah, exactly. You crack your knuckles a little bit. You do a little, all right, yep. Here we go.
And I got to say... I don't know who he's got for this Saturday show.
Uh-huh.
He has it's him, Rob Dew, and some dude named Mike. I don't know who this Mike dude is, but he is a weirdo.
Okay. All right.
He is a sleepy weirdo.
All right. We're going to bring Mike in.
Holy shit.
Okay.
It's not to be believed.
Okay.
This guy.
All right.
So anyway, Alex is fighting Satan.
Sure.
And maybe he just wants to quit.
That's fair.
You know,
Satan's got infinite resources and is it a million years old yeah. or whatever.
I don't think Satan's interested in an information war.
That's probably true.
Yeah. It's time for the information war against heaven.
Did you know what you missed? In the 40 days and 40 nights that Satan tempted Jesus in the desert,
yep.
most of what they talked about was Alex.
Well, when
Dude, do you know what we're going to eventually have to deal with?
Uh-huh.
You have no fucking clue.
When Satan got, like, all the angels, you know, turn against God or whatever, it was, I mean, it really was information warfare.
Yeah,
when you really
it was. I mean, it's like you had to first convince them that their freedom was stolen by an infinite creator.
It was mostly about vaccines.
Yeah, pretty much.
Anyway, Alex is fighting against Satan.
And we have now entered the operational shutdown of the planet as we know it. And the decision has been made to overwrite every genetic system on the Earth. And the Earth is to be completely sacrificed in the attempt to become God.
Sure.
In fact, their main mission, they say, is to destroy the Earth. And then only out of that metamorphosis can this new creature emerge. That's what they've been told. It is their universal code. It is their ethos. It is their religion. And they've signed on to it. And they've rebelled against God that made us. And so I really don't even know if I could keep doing this show. And I don't, I'm not kidding. I think I'm going to have to just hand this over to somebody else. This stuff's too big to even talk about on air. If people don't know about this now, they're not going to figure it out. I just need to get ready with my family. I can't believe this, man. God almighty. It's so horrible.
Oof, that didn't seem sincere.
Oh, I had a dream about the space baby from 2001 Space Odyssey, and I just don't know if I can do this anymore.
Oh.
It's just too big for me.
Oh, no, so terrible.
The time baby is out there. It's going to grow into a thing.
This is just, it's big stuff, though, man.
Sure.
The globalists are trying to give birth to Satan to walk on the earth.
Right.
This is too big.
No, that's a real bummer.
I kind of understand wanting to go to the woods. But
yeah.
Then again, in the best of times, I want to go to the woods.
That's true.
So
that's true.
Maybe I'm not the person to talk about this.
I don't know. Wouldn't the woods be a bad place? Because Satan's all about the fire.
He does love fire.
Yeah. You would want more like a blacktop.
Sure.
Go move into a parking lot
desert.
Somewhere. Yeah.
A desert would be great.
And then whenever he burns it all, you've got glass to make really great windows.
This could be a good
plan. Yeah. We're going to make it through this apocalypse, Dan.
So anyway, back to lying about this document that he's not going to cover until Saturday.
Okay.
And they all know it's bull. It's just every part of it is a lie. And you're wearing a death shroud. You're wearing this diaper. And they even admit in the John Hopkins report that it gets an added bonus, the bacterial pneumonia of the mask wearers is going to really increase their death toll.
The word mask does not appear once in the John Hopkins document.
That sounds right.
Yeah. In the scenario, bacterial pneumonia is a condition that appears to be connected to the invented virus SPARS. But Alex is completely making up everything he's saying here about this document.
Wow.
Pretty great.
That's lovely. I do like whenever you can toss in something that isn't even mentioned obliquely.
Mm-hmm.
That's always good stuff.
Pretty solid.
Yeah.
So, you know, as someone who's fighting the devil, Alex has covered himself in the armor of God.
Sure.
And that means talking about the Bible.
Naturally.
And
got to get into it. And it's also Good Friday, right?
No, this is Thursday.
Oh, okay.
It's Monday, Thursday.
Apologies.
Right? Isn't that what it is?
No idea.
I can't remember what the... There's Good Friday.
Right. Palm Thursday. Palm Saturday.
Palm Wednesday.
Palm Wednesday.
Ash Wednesday.
Ash Wednesday. But that's way different.
Ew.
No, don't worry about it.
I don't know the week.
We're doing great.
I'd forgotten.
Yeah.
Anyway, Alex also has forgotten some things about Revelation.
If you believe the Bible, no flesh would be spared lest God intervened. No flesh would have been spared. None.
Sure.
And it says the rich men will sit under the mountains, fortresses, under the mountains, beating themselves in the head, so angry that they serve Satan, and begging God to forgive them.
So like Trump, right?
And at that point, they've committed the ultimate sin. There will be no Holy Ghost. There will be no forgiveness. You have now chosen your side.
Yeah, like Trump, right?
Oh, wow. That's just intense.
Weird.
Wow, that's an intense thought, but it's also a delicious thought, Dan.
So weird. So if the Bible did, in fact, say that rich people would live under mountains, that kind of does sound like Alex's whole thing about the elite globalists having underground bases.
Isn't he rich?
Yeah. Unfortunately, Alex is leaving out a very critical part of the verse that he's poorly referencing. This is from Revelation 6, verse 15. Quote, "Then the kings of the earth, the princes, the generals, the rich, the mighty, and everyone else, both slave and free, hid in caves and among the rocks of the mountains."
Oh, so everybody hid in caves.
Yes.
It wasn't just the rich people.
No.
It was a whole plethora of folk.
Yep.
Gotcha.
It's pretty much everyone trying to hide from the opening of the sixth
seal. So
it's
pretty much everyone.
Yep.
Gotcha.
Anyway, much like Alex just writes fan fiction about the nefarious documents he covers as news, he does the same thing with the Bible. Even, like, religious texts. Everything is just a prop
for him to use. Yeah, man, it really seems like that should be way more important.
Yeah.
You know, you want to know it word by word, really.
Yeah.
If you were fighting the devil, that is. Yeah. It seems like that would be your best weapon against the devil, is knowledge of the Bible.
Sure. Yeah. I've seen that in various Chuck Norris movies.
Yes, indeed we have.
So Roger is coming in again.
great.
Which we saw on our last episode.
Yeah, it's time to pray.
It's interesting, though. I got really weirded out by this.
Roger Stone has talked a lot about trying to draft Flynn to get him ready to lead a national movement, to run for president, or to support Trump for running for president. But regardless, instead of overthinking it, I agree with him, Flynn's got to launch it now. And I'm going to leave it at that. And obviously, I've been talking to Flynn, and I just need to... We need to draft him here on this show. We can't wait for Trump. We can't wait for DeSantis. We need General Flynn, who is a good man and a patriot, understand what's going on. We need him to do this. So Roger's at a dental appointment. He's a little bit late. He'll be popping in sometime next hour.
So... On our last episode, the conversation was about trying to draft Flynn or Gates.
Sure.
To be the next Trump.
Gates might not be around for much longer.
We've gone a day, and Alex is just pretending that wasn't the whole conversation.
Never happened. No, we never defended that guy. He's a real criminal.
Now, I mean, not to his credit, but Roger is still like... He's innocent. He's being set up.
Yeah, that sounds like a good Roger move.
Boy, has it deflated. It is not. Like, they spent over an hour on the last episode.
Incriminating themselves in order to defend Gates.
Look, he just likes to party.
Hey, guys. We had a post-debriefing on this one, and we decided you guys should not commit any crimes in the defense of someone.
Hey, everybody out there in the InfoWars land, shit got bad. Shit kept going the way it looked like it was going to go. And
we should have seen it coming.
Yep. I can walk away from this at this point.
Not hard.
Gonna
buy.
Yeah. So I listened to this next clip, and I kind of got the sense that, like, Roger's fucking with Alex a little bit, which I can kind of enjoy.
Well, he just got back
from
the
desk. Roger Stone has been trying for a week to send me a report, a secret report. It's not a classified report. It's a secret report.
My email doesn't work.
He can't send it to any of our emails. They're in his email blocking it. They're in our email.
Oh, no, it really is.
It's a total takeover, folks. The full weight of the government works against the country to implode it and destroy it.
Yep.
All right.
Yep. In his email.
My email doesn't work.
Roger can send me emails, but he can't send me this secret document.
I don't know why Outlook isn't working right now.
Yeah, that's.
Oh, boy.
I think there's Occam's razor tells me Roger is fucking with Alex.
Yeah, that would make sense.
So we get another headline here, and this is important. This is really important stuff.
Breaking. That's right. The Alex Jones Show. There's a war on for your mind. High school to re-educate students. That's a quote. Who refused to wear COVID mask in Clearwater, Florida. Even a conservative city, conservative state, there the leftists are teaching their critical, radical race theory, teaching America sucks. A high school in Clearwater, Florida says it will re-educate students who do not wear a mask when required.
Naturally.
This is a story about Clearwater High School, and honestly, if I were involved, I would have just told them to use a different word than re-educate in their manual.
Yeah, that seems very easy.
Yeah, it says, quote, "Students who do not wear a mask when it is required or refuse to do so should first be re-educated on the importance of wearing a mask. If after the re-education occurs they do not comply, the student's administrator should be contacted."
The importance of wearing a mask masks should be reinforced.
Yes.
If not done so, yep. If behavior has not changed, and then this whole thing goes away.
The word re-education is something that means a lot of different things in different contexts. For Alex, the word means commies taking kids to camps and doing that thing from Clockwork Orange.
Naturally.
In this context, it's really clear that what they mean is that if a student is refusing to wear a mask, they should be given a chance to better understand why a mask is important in a schoolroom setting before any kind of disciplinary action is even considered.
Right.
This is essentially what, it's just basically saying like the kids get a warning.
Yeah.
The right-wing blogs that are covering this story use this quote, but seem to leave off what comes immediately after it in the school's plan for the new academic year.
Yeah, that's harder.
Quote, not wearing a mask when it's required is not a disciplinary matter, but rather a health and safety concern. Administrators will contact the parent or guardian for support. If the refusal continues, the principal must contact the area superintendent to discuss options, which include administrative placement into one of the other learning options. This placement is a non-disciplinary placement and is based on the health and safety needs of all students and staff. So this same document literally says that students who refuse to wear masks won't get in trouble, and if it's something that can't be resolved, then accommodation will be made to allow them to continue to go to class remotely. That seems like going above and beyond to cater to people who refuse to wear masks in public gathering settings.
Yeah.
But of course they use the word re-education, so this is somehow about critical race theory or something.
Yeah, that sounds right.
Ridiculous.
Their plan is really well thought out and kind of considerate and perhaps overly sensitive, you know. But it is better than my plan of if a kid decides not to wear a mask, you go to his house and scream in his parents' face until they leave you alone forever.
Tougher to codify into a rule.
It's better that I wouldn't use the word re-education.
Give less meat for Alex.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Roger comes on after the dentist, and like I said, they do not talk about Matt Gaetz much.
Sure,
it's much different than the day before.
Unsurprising.
The entire interview is about how Alex wants General Flynn to announce that he's running for president, and Roger trying to explain to Alex that there's a game they need to play. Roger is saying that if they're going to do this, the first thing they need to do is gather massive amounts of data about the people who would support Flynn, and then they need to somehow get around all the social media bans that all these shitheads like Alex have that limit their reach.
Right.
It's a farce of an interview, and it seems pretty clear to me that there's going to be some attempt coming down the line to try to replace Trump with Flynn as the figurehead of the InfoWars idol cult. Roger is trying to subtly implant the idea that Flynn is like Eisenhower. He's a military hero who the people need to coerce into running for office because it's his duty to the country. See, Roger seems to realize that the only thing that's going to work for someone like Flynn is a fully realized storyline to push as a campaign, and his character works with that kind of archetype, regardless of how disconnected from reality it is. It's the same thing they did with Trump, pretending that he was a successful businessman who had never had any interest in politics who won the presidency on his first try. When compared to reality, that's bullshit, but it's a compelling storyline for the base to enjoy. Flynn, being a reluctant candidate, would have a similar, complete bullshit narrative thing if it were to get off the ground, but could be effective.
I am wilded out by the idea that anyone would want anyone who had any command during the Iraq War.
Oh, yeah, that's weird. Also,
right?
Also somebody who pledged allegiance to QAnon.
Yeah, shouldn't that be immediately disqualifying? Like, I don't even care what your politics are. You were involved with commanding in the Iraq War. You are already a failure before you even began.
Yeah, you should maybe take a seat.
You should go away.
So Roger wants to build up to this subtly and softly, whereas Alex is a little bit less patient. They're just going back and forth about how Flynn needs to go on the attack immediately. That's what Alex is saying. And then Roger comes back with, who knows what'll happen. And then finally, Alex has just had enough.
Here's the deal. He's got to do it. He knows it. And the amount of money he can raise is staggering. And so he's going to run for president. I'm drafting him right now. And so are the American people. And as he does these quiet events to 10,000 people here, 10,000 people there, 1,000 there, everybody that goes to these things he quietly has that are packed out need to tell him, you're doing it. And I'm not being presumptive here. Listen, they want you and I in jail because they know we helped light the fire with Trump. They know that we're not afraid, and they know we've got lightning in a bottle, and they know that lightning does strike the same place repeatedly. That's how will and zeitgeist and
wait,
destiny
what?
Is. So, obviously, I could sail off in the sunset right now. The globalists are ready to buy me off like that. I could snap my fingers, $100 million, private jets, everything. But I'm not selling humanity out. So, and he's not either. He just keeps overthinking it. He needs to listen to you. He needs to announce soon.
Alex is sick of the bullshit, and he wants a hero figure to get behind, and it's Flynn's the best they got right now.
I have run out of options for God King. It turns out without his inimitable platform, Trump's shit-talking doesn't work.
Yeah. I am not really all that good as the center focus.
Exactly.
Me, Alex Jones, not good as center focus. Need to be someone else's hype man.
Totally.
That person I'm hyping is absent now.
Not going.
This does not work.
I'm really flailing.
I need a dad.
You are 100% correct.
Yep.
That is exactly what's going on.
So this clip means nothing, but sure. I just thought it was kind of interesting to hear Alex describe the plot of Romeo and Juliet. I think he gets some of the beats right.
Okay. I'm really, really interested in this. I'm going to be honest. This is the first time in a while I've been like, I'm going to be on the edge of my seat for
Alex's literature recap.
Like reading a William Shakespeare play that you've already read before, you know, you turn the page and Romeo and Juliet meet.
Tell me you
love, and their parents are mean to them. They have their problems, and by the end, they commit suicide. You know the play.
All right. Well, that's
there's more to it.
But he's not wrong. He's not wrong.
It didn't exist as a venerated play for hundreds of years because mm-hmm. of that plot synopsis.
I mean, but look. The skeleton is there.
There's a thing. Their parents are mad at them. They kill themselves. And it's a great play.
The parents are mean.
You've read it before. It does not sound like you've read it before, sir.
Oh, God.
It sounds like you saw half of the Leonardo DiCaprio version and then woke up at the end.
You're one of these literature major types, though. Like, from where? I'm from the streets, right?
Sure. No, I'm with you.
For someone like me, I hear that and I'm like, yeah, that is what Romeo and Juliet is about. Because it is.
Yeah, but even if you're watching
more.
West Side Story, there's more to it than that.
I disagree.
Okay, well, that's fair. That's fair. You could cut out a lot of those songs.
A classic
you're
tale.
You're not wrong.
A classic tale of people meeting, their families being mean,
right.
And then they kill themselves.
And then they kill themselves. Yes. I mean, you know, it does have an arc.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Alex cares about the theater, cares
sure,
about classic
sure.
literature.
Naturally.
But what he doesn't care about, money.
Okay.
And you know why I feel so upset? I've never cared about money. And back when I could have made a ton of money before we were censored, I would make enough money to fund the operation, and if I had extra money, I'd hire more people and expand because my mission was to beat the New World Order. I never cared about money. But now I can tell you, going into the future, you'll be able to stave this off a little bit longer, but not longer if you do have money. I mean, this is a world civilization ending event coming up. And it's all right there. I mean, man, they are talking about everyone vaccinated is going to have Alzheimer's, including children. And society's going to collapse, and they're going to have robots clean us all up off the streets. And, I mean, I knew this was all coming. I already laid it out. But, my God,
sure.
This is scarier than my film Endgame. And they wrote the damn thing. I mean, God.
Do they get royalties for that?
I don't even know what to do at this point. Just please save us, God. God's like, yeah, well, stop killing all those babies.
Woof.
Weird God. Yeah. Weird God.
So just a quick fact check. There's literally nothing in the Johns Hopkins report about anything close to what Alex is making up here. The robots cleaning up dead bodies stuff is just from Soylent Green. The word Alzheimer's doesn't even appear in the document.
No, that makes perfect sense.
The Johns Hopkins document is about public health communication challenges that could come up in the event of a disease outbreak. It's comically stupid for Alex to pretend that there's a chapter on how everyone's going to be dead and robots will clean up our corpses. This is so made up.
It'd be a really weird flourish for them to just be like, oh, and also the vaccine causes Alzheimer's even in children.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's a clause.
Also, Alex loves money.
Yeah. So much. He should be swimming in a Scrooge McDuck style. Yeah.
Also, at the end of the April 1st show, Alex interviews James O'Keefe about some footage he apparently got of immigrants living in poor conditions. This falls under the heading of a subject I care about, and it's a political issue that means quite a bit. It's something that people should be paying attention to, but I do not trust that the person delivering this message is acting in good faith.
Oh, no.
And I don't care.
No.
I've reserved the right to ignore anything James O'Keefe does, so fuck him. Let's move on. 1 to April 2nd.
Yeah, 100% fuck James.
I could have seen that being an April Fool's episode, though. The way Alex is like, I'm not covering this document until Saturday. Then he lies a bit about it. Little touch and go on it.
James O'Keefe's existence is a joke.
Has Roger on, and Alex sort of pretends that the conversation didn't involve Matt Gaetz the day prior.
Sure.
It's very weird.
Never thought of Matt Gaetz before, honestly.
So we get to the 2nd, and the tone is completely changed. Everything is like, things are totally different.
Look at these headlines on InfoWars.com. Biden infrastructure bill includes $20 billion to destroy highways for being racist. Now, if you're not aware of this, I'm not joking. Here's some of the headlines. Here's out of the News Gazette. Biden administration may target racist highways. That was December. Woman called for highway removal in a black neighborhood. Well, oh my God. One person calls for a statue to come down. One person calls for a cross to come down. One person calls for a highway to come down. The White House singled it out in its infrastructure plan as racist. And they're announcing the big giant highway that brings all the jobs and to the neighborhood and people can get around the town will be destroyed. I mean, I shouldn't laugh at this. This is so evil, ladies and gentlemen.
We covered this back in the Endgame coverage, so I don't want to dwell too much on the subject, but in case Alex is listening, the history of the placement of highways is incredibly racist. The fact that he's laughing at the idea and mocking it really only reveals that he has no idea about the history of that subject.
Totally.
No one's calling for all highways to be gone so there can't be business or travel anywhere. The conversation is about how the ways that highways have been constructed in the past often has been done with absolutely no regard for minority communities, and often to their detriment. There's tons of primary sources Alex could read up on if he's interested in the devastating impact that practices like redlining had on communities of color in this country totally. In terms of social impacts and the destruction of economic power over generations.
The history of redlining in Chicago is so fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alex is a stupid, stupid bigot who doesn't actually care about reporting accurate information or depicting reality to his audience. He's just interested in protecting the notions of whiteness.
And I am demanding that Joe Biden destroy all of Illinois' portion of Route 66. I want it all gone.
You don't want to get kicks anymore
on
that Route 66?
I want it all gone. No more historic Route 66. I want all the signs taken down. Mm. I want the asphalt dug up.
I have no skin in this game, so I'll support you on this.
Historic
I don't have a car.
Moat 66 is what I want. Fill
crocodiles.
It with water. Fill it with water and crocodiles. I don't want to see that part of the state anymore.
Does the Dan Ryan survive?
Well, why not?
Okay. So
sure,
tyranny. You heard of it?
I'm familiar.
It's speeding up, and has been speeding up over time.
That doesn't sound 100% wrong.
And we're there. It's fucking tyranny, man.
This is what they like to do, and they're doing it to us in an act of raw power and domination. And we sit here with our open free society model in a daze as it moves so quickly. 10 years ago, we were going 5 miles an hour. 5 years ago, we were going 50 miles an hour.
Ooh, that's faster.
3 years ago, we were going 100 miles an hour.
Whoa.
Honestly, though, if you think about the time in between these speeds, that
sure.
is a very slow acceleration.
Yeah, it's not quite parabolic,
no.
is it?
2 years ago, we were going 200 miles an hour. A year ago, we were going 500 miles an hour. And now we're going 10,000 miles an hour down the rat hole.
That's a big jump.
That was parabolic.
And we're going to go 1 million miles an hour.
Oof.
And 2 million miles an
That's
hour.
That's quick.
And 1 billion miles an hour. Right into hell, ladies and gentlemen. That's how tyranny works. It builds up. It gets its confidence going. People submit. And like dominoes, boom, kills everybody.
Okay.
And John Hopkins, I'll cover it tomorrow, has got it all laid out, how the collapse is going to work. There are going to be so many brain-damaged people from these vaccines that society
sure.
will shut down.
Naturally.
We're just going to have big mass reclamation centers right out of Soylent Green.
Of course.
Where we're just killing people around the clock.
Why
Young
not?
People, old people. You just sign the paperwork, roll your son in, your daughter in, your mama, your daddy. 20 years old, 30 years old, 60 years old. Because they could have just given them something that killed them right away. That'd be too obvious. You'd fight back.
Sure.
Or something that kills you down the road, but instantly when you finally die. No,
Naturally.
They want it to be something that wipes you out. They want it to be something that weighs on everyone. They want the sorrow and the pain and the breakdown and have the big medical system suck everything out of you, squeezing you dry before they blast you out into dust.
None of that is in the document.
Yeah.
I like how he describes something from Soylent Green and then says that it's in the document like in Soylent Green.
Yeah. Yeah. That's real convenient.
Yeah.
It is really helpful for movies to tell you what is in the document you're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah, it's. Yeah. I could describe any movie and then just claim that it's what a document says and be like, sure. It's like The Matrix.
Sure.
It doesn't matter.
Oh, man.
You're not doing anything.
Dude, the Rockefeller Report on 13 going on 30 and body swap issues.
Holy shit.
Insane. Yeah, that's insane. We're all going to swap with our parents.
I read that document out of the Aspen Institute about body swapping.
No, we're going to learn important lessons problem. About walking in each other's shoes. It's actually going to be great.
Right. But the people who don't learn those lessons, it's going to create
robots in the streets cleaning them up.
Displaced within other people.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it'd be terrible.
Terrifying.
Illegal immigration inside a body. Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's
we're going to have a lot of new regulations.
It's going to be an issue.
And the Aspen Institute is working on that, and I appreciate it.
I think it's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So I've been saying that Alex isn't really supporting Gates as much.
Right.
And that is mostly because it was aggressive at the end of March. Those last episodes in March, it was...
Yeah.
Over the top.
I've fucked underage women. What? I didn't mean to say that in defense of Matt Gaetz. I meant to say it's okay if you fuck. Nope, that's not good either.
Wait, you're telling me he dated a 17-year-old 3 years ago? What's the big deal?
Yeah, it's fine.
So, in total fairness, like Roger was still defending him. And Alex on the April 2nd episode does sort of support him, but you can sense like a lack of enthusiasm.
A little reticence.
A little bit just like,
But Matt Gaetz, with no proof why he's got to be removed. Well, they're saying he might have given a 22-year-old girl $1,000 one time. And maybe she flew on a commercial flight with him, so that's sex trafficking. Of course, he's not on Alita Express flying to a Caribbean island, and now we're learning it's not a 17-year-old girl, but it's okay. Because Tim Cook runs death camps.
What?
They're the moral media. They're going to get that Matt Gaetz. Matt Gaetz did something real, I'd throw him under the bus just like that. But that's not what happened here. I've also gotten to experience them doing it to me. But, of course, I said, go ahead, publish all your lies. Ha-ha. And, of course, they don't.
Still needing to bring himself into it defense.
Unnecessary.
Very strange.
Very
strange.
If he says something like, oh, if it's real, I'll throw him under the bus, I want a countdown clock to appear right over his head.
Sure.
You know, just like Ted.
But you can sense the different tone. Like, very different than he was before. This is the dismount. So anyway, Alex goes to calls and he gets this one caller. The call wasn't interesting, but he said something that I wanted to play as like, this is the type of person who believes in Alex's shit.
Sure.
And you think about the UN. The UN was created because of the Club of Rome, basically, to give the Antichrist his power. That's why the UN was created.
Sorry, what now?
So the Club of Rome was founded in 1968 and the UN began in 1945.
Yeah, because they knew the Club of Rome was coming.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you understand, like, there's just this... This is the sort of
thinking. No, Dan. You're not understanding.
The UN
I believe the Club of Rome he's speaking about...
Oh, boy.
...is Romulus and Remus.
And the wolves.
Exactly.
I mean, like, okay, so the Antichrist needs to get its power.
Sure.
And that's why they made the UN.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
13 years later, the Club of Rome is founded... It just doesn't make any sense. Anyway, Alex, in between calls, rambles a little bit about how, oh, God, wouldn't it be so great if the U.S. and Russia became best friends?
Ah, that would be great.
And anybody that studies geopolitics knows that the U.S. links up with Russia geopolitically. It's over. Those two countries could dominate the world for good and a new golden age. But, alas, we know that's not how it works, right? Anybody can read Revelation, the dragon, the whole war that happens. We all know it unfolds.
What?
So now the holy war that unfolds is between the United States and Russia.
I guess so. But also, this is a real strong argument of predeterminism.
Yeah.
There's no free will.
It does seem like that.
Yeah.
It does seem like we're dipping into Calvin territory.
Yeah, this is a horrifying view.
Of course, we all know what happens in Revelations.
Yeah. Hey, you know, geopolitically, if the U.S. and Russia teamed up, they could dominate the world, but we know from Revelation that's not going to happen.
But that's such a fucking cop-out. Fuck you.
Fair enough.
Fuck you. How dare you?
Fair enough.
The Book of Revelation doesn't also include like 100 years of prep time for the Antichrist to rise.
There is that part in Revelation about how the devil's 10 years behind.
Wow, that was an interesting thing for John to add.
Yeah. So we get another caller, and this dude is on every fucking episode. He calls in all the time. It's a dude named Carlos.
Okay.
And he thinks that everything that's going on right now is an attack on Christianity.
Sure.
What do you, obviously, I'm going to cover this John Hopkins document tomorrow that admits we're in a simulation takeover. The vaccines are going to make a lot of people sick. It's a society collapsing weapon. It's so incredible. What is their big end game? Why are they so savage? Why are they moving ahead with something so incredibly dangerous and committing these giant mass crimes?
Because what people don't realize, and this is Good Friday to think about it, this is an anti-Christian worldwide movement.
Sure.
It is led by individuals who are not Christians. Or
exactly. The U.S. is taking more vaccines than anybody else, and predominantly it's Christian countries being hit by this. You're exactly right.
I don't know how this dude gets on every day. Like, almost every day. It makes me think that either he has a priority number or they don't get that many calls.
I doubt they get that many calls.
That Carlos dude is on all the fucking time.
Okay.
And Alex has a bizarre level of deference for him. Like, he lets Carlos talk for quite a while.
Yeah, Carlos seems like a guy that is in the
circle. He has
some
thoughts.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe he's just letting people talk too much now because he gets another caller, and I will say that he let this guy talk too long.
Too long?
A little bit too long.
Oh, that's unsurprising.
Not the same kind of problems that Harrison Smith gets when people talk too long.
Sure.
This guy just sounds a little bit sovereign citizen-y.
Oh.
You know, we have some really big issues. That Trump owns the original post office. And it's been...
The original post office?
That the wars are between post office. And, you know, this whole thing is about the legal fictions of that Congress created to our birth certificates that were representing that all caps name. So
is that MF2?
Like you said over and over, we're operating under color of law. Color of law. And until and unless we refute their presumptions and stop representing that all caps name. Now, you can find an explanation of that at Anna von Rentz, article number 73. She really, really gets into it and has sent notices.
Beautiful, brother. Got to jump here, buddy. But thank you, Steven.
Beautiful. Wow. So
all caps when you spell the man name, Dan.
Right. Beyond that, then that's just standard sovereign citizen stuff.
Yeah, naturally.
Hooray for
all
that.
Caps birth certificate. You're great.
Now, I was unaware that Trump owns the original post office.
I was surprised to discover that as well.
And that all wars are wars between post offices.
Did you not know that?
I didn't.
Did you not know that there has been a 100-year secret war between post offices? Ever since one guy, his horse, knocked over another guy's horse and started the great post office war.
I feel like probably there were, in earlier times, some feuding between
capitalism is capitalism.
Yeah,
if you're getting paid by the, if you're getting paid by the letter,
yeah
people are going to fight.
These days.
A little different.
Not sure.
A little different.
So, this show sucks. This episode is not good.
Sorry, I just got the image of, you know, just a regular post office driver. Just driving on with the door open on the wrong side, and you're like, isn't that cute? You guys are driving. They get out, and then they're suddenly attacked by another post office guy. Throws them into the open window of the car and lights it up on fire.
The FedEx boys jump the UPS boys.
Yes, it's the IRA of post offices. Yeah. Yes, I gotcha.
So, like I said, this show sucks. This episode's bad. And in the third hour, Alex has Drew Hernandez on, who's another reporter baby. I find this guy's voice incredibly annoying. He's on to talk about the border and about, everything is...
Oh, those people from not
flood.
Here. They're coming to here, and we don't want them here.
But,
they're from not here.
But mic down for this, because this is how the interview started and where I turned it off.
Okay.
you were saying, yeah, well, let's get into the border, but also some of the culture war stuff and some of the things that are going on as they put us onto this virtual economy. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty sure your viewers are familiar with Bad Baby. You know, she's the Catch Me Outside girl that was on Dr. Phil, went extremely viral, totally depraved. She made an OnlyFans.
I gotta go. I don't know. I don't know what good is gonna come of this conversation about the Cash Me Outside girl having an OnlyFans.
Nope.
I don't care.
Did you know that somebody in a viral video has an OnlyFans account now? Did I?
And
no.
She's a rapper.
Do
apparently.
I care? Yeah. No. Mm-hmm. Goodbye.
Yep.
Goodbye, sir.
Yeah. I don't care to listen to you, I guess. I mean, best case scenario, shame someone for being a sex worker. Yeah. Like, I don't give a... I
know people with OnlyFans accounts. Cool. Have fun.
Yeah.
It's great. I hope you supplement your income, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. If he's on to talk about the border, but first we're going to get into culture wars.
Goodbye.
And someone has an OnlyFans account, and I'm mad about it. Mm-mm. I have to leave. I can't... I'm not going to take you seriously.
No, that's a dynasty-level offense. If I had a glass of wine in my hand, I would throw it in that guy's face.
How dare you, sir.
Yes.
The temerity. Yeah, and plus, like, I mean, realistically, Saturday is just right around the corner.
Of course.
I'm not going to waste
You're too
my
excited.
Time with
You're
Drew
too
Hernandez.
Excited. Yeah.
I'm not going to waste my time.
You've got an hour of meat and gristle to really dig your teeth into.
Yep. So here we go. This is where things start off with Alex covering the Johns Hopkins document.
Sure.
Now, most people that are informed have heard about Event 201. They've heard about Operation Lockstep. They've heard about Crimson Contagion. They've heard about Disease X and the UN drills. But have you heard about
Bummertown?
SARS 2025-2028? It is all of those plans together.
It's not.
But not set in the near future like those previous drills were, but set out a few more years in the future.
Ah.
That's a parallel in the time we're in now. So just superimpose 2025 to 2028 with 2020 to 2023. And it is exactly what's happening.
So I love the idea that Alex says the Johns Hopkins scenario depicts things exactly as they're happening in real life, just superimposed on a different date. Also, nothing funnier than it's not a little
it's
bit in the future.
In the
it's a
future.
Few years.
It's a few. It's not in the near future, right. Idiots. It's in the near future.
Yeah. Alex didn't know where that sentence was going to end when it started.
Yeah, no, that's a bad dismount.
So when he's talking about things being exactly like real life, just a few years off.
Sure.
I have a few things to say.
Okay, toss it at me.
First of all, one of the main tensions of the Hopkins exercise is messaging issues around a drug that was believed to be effective against SPARS called Calosevir. There wasn't a drug that the government was trying to push for the treatment of COVID in the way that the medical community gets behind Calosevir in this exercise. Maybe Remdesivir, possibly, but...
Yeah, I mean, your basic there is, like, Trump and his messaging campaign.
Hydroxychloroquine?
Pushed hydroxychloroquine so hard.
Yeah,
the
it
mixed
doesn't
messaging,
fit, though.
Yeah.
It doesn't fit for this, and I don't think that Remdesivir does either in terms of the way it's depicted in this, the exercise. So that's, to me, this seems like one really big problem with the scenario matching real world history. Second, backlash to Calosevir begins in February 2026, 4 months into the outbreak, when a video of a child projectile vomiting after taking a dose goes viral online. This did not happen 4 months into COVID, even metaphorically.
That's fair.
Third, in May 2026, a made-up rapper named BZ suffers a public embarrassment when trying to promote SPARS treatments to his audience, when he compares people who volunteer for vaccine trials to participants in the Tuskegee experiments. This did not happen in the real world.
Exhibit A in Why Scientists Don't Become Rappers.
Mm-hmm.
Our fictitious rapper is named BZ.
Sure. There are plenty of examples of things like this that did not happen in the real world, but do in the scenario exercise, because the point of the events that happen in the scenario is to create situations where messaging challenges would arise that the exercise participants could reflect on how best to respond. The inclusion of a situation like this rapper making a public gaffe in this scenario doesn't make sense out of context. When you don't see this exercise within the context of why it exists, it seems really weird. But when you understand that it's designed to assist medical communications professionals brainstorm the ways that they might need to respond to various events in a crisis, the picture makes far more sense. At the same time that BZ makes his comments, the fictional former president Jacqueline Bennett gives a noncommittal answer about whether or not she would give her grandson Calisevir, which creates a similar but slightly different messaging problem for the exercise participants to reflect on.
Sure.
Anyway, the point is a bunch of things that happen in very differently in this imagined scenario than have happened in our real-world outbreak. Alex is just trying to pretend everything is the same because it's more fun and profitable for him, but it's all made up.
So is BZ supposed to be a probably play Jay-Z on Yeezy?
I thought Jay-Z.
Well, I mean, but the very public gaffe would suggest more of a Kanye circumstance here.
Yeah, you're not wrong, but I think that
are they saying that Kanye is going to Taylor Swift COVID-19?
No, because in the context of the scenario exercise, BZ is one of the people who is enlisted to help get messaging out about the safety of the treatments.
Sure. And then he said George Bush doesn't care about black people.
See, I don't think that Kanye would be enlisted medical community.
Not anymore.
So this document, my friend, is a timeline.
Sure.
This is what you need to understand.
Naturally.
Timeline.
But a few years off into the near future.
So basically you just transpose the beginning of the outbreak to the outbreak in the document.
Sure.
You could tell what's going to happen in the future.
That sounds right.
And unfortunately, we are 6 months away from something bad.
Oh, that's bad.
Now, here's what's devastating. We're about 13 months into the simulation that, again, is not really a simulation. They're using that to cover their operations. In case they get caught with the documents, they just say it's part of the drill. That's a classic operation by intelligence agencies, governments, but also health agencies.
Classic by health agencies.
Next, they say that within 6 months to a year of people being inoculated with these experimental GMO gene therapies, that you will have massive brain damage and spongiform encephalopathy, basically, or prion disease, mad cow disease.
So that's good times.
That's a real bummer.
Yeah.
That's going to be a really rough 6 months to a year from now.
Don't worry, it's bullshit.
Oh, okay.
So in the exercise, there's this potential basis for a vaccine discovered in the form of an animal vaccine for hoofed mammal respiratory virus developed by a company called GMI.
Mm-hmm.
This condition was similar in many ways to SPARS, so researchers began looking at whether or not it could be effective for humans.
Mm-hmm.
One of the initial downsides was that, quote, data provided by GMI suggested that the vaccine was effective at preventing SPARS-like illness in cows, pigs, and other hoofed mammals, but internal trials revealed several worrisome side effects, including swollen legs, severe joint pain, and encephalitis leading to seizures or death.
Right. And cows learning how to talk.
Sure. In this scenario, in May 2027, a group of parents, the size of the group is unspecified, they sue the government because they believe that their children got encephalitis from the vaccine. The claims are not presented as necessarily accurate. It's just more detail added to make this a more real scenario, since this mirrors real-world anti-vax folks.
Sure.
And it's something that presents a challenge to the messaging that's required for medical communicators.
Naturally.
The scenario does say that, quote, after showing no adverse side effects for nearly a year, several vaccine recipients slowly began to experience symptoms such as blurry vision, headaches, and numbness in their extremities. Due to the small number of cases, the significance of the association with CoronaVax was never determined. As of this writing in 2030, longitudinal studies initiated by the NIH at the beginning of the vaccination program have not reached the next round of data collection, so formal analysis of these symptoms has not yet been conducted. Furthermore, these cases arose from the initial cohort of vaccine recipients, those in high-risk populations, including those with other underlying conditions, making it increasingly difficult to determine the extent to which these symptoms are associated with vaccination.
Right.
I read this earlier, but I wanted to read it again because this brings up an important point, and that is that these elements of the scenario, it's left intentionally open-ended.
Yeah.
Because it exists to pose a question to the participants, not to depict a reality that actually exists. In that scenario, how does a person in a position of medical messaging respond? How do you convey confidence on the medical side of things while still acknowledging certain uncertainties? These are the sorts of questions this story arc is meant to bring up.
Yeah.
Because Alex knows better and he's a psychic, he's realized that this is actually the globalists admitting that they're going to give everyone mad cow disease when the encephalitis is really just the animal vaccine.
Right.
That GMI created.
Right.
And it's just encephalitis in animals. And then there's some parents who allege encephalitis, but it's not actually proven in the case of the scenario.
No, and that's maybe the most important question for the study to ask, which is, how is it that we can tell people, honestly, we don't know, and at the same time reassure them that they can trust us?
Yeah, and one of the other things that they take great care to sort of point out is exploring ideas of how to be compassionate about the uncertainty, because right. it's an understandable right. feeling for people to have. And how do you mix that compassion about the uncertainty with right. The confidence in medical science? And it's a challenging thing, but that's why you do exercises yeah. like this.
Yeah, my message would probably not be good. I would be more something like, listen, we know public education has failed you between first and eighth grade at least.
You wouldn't make it through the exercise. So the thing is that Alex is connecting this with a study that mm-hmm. he's found, right? So they say encephalitis sure. in the scenario, right?
Right.
And what?
That's like the Zika virus, right?
I just mentioned to you spongiform encephalopathy or prion disease. Microbiology, Infectious Diseases Journal, COVID-19 RNA-based vaccines and the risk of prion disease. That was put out in 2021 by prestigious scientists.
Whenever you hear Alex say that a claim is being made by a prestigious scientist, that means he has no idea who the person is.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's a huge red flag immediately. Yep.
It's an unknown quantity, but he wants to elevate this claim that they're making because it works sure. well for him.
Sure.
This claim that the COVID vaccine causes prion disease was based entirely on a non-peer-reviewed paper by a guy named J. Bart Klassen. No one agrees with his conclusion, and he is not a prestigious scientist. According to USA Today, quote, in 1999, he claimed the influenza vaccine caused type 1 diabetes, a claim disproven by Johns Hopkins University Institute for Vaccine Safety. He's just an anti-vax weirdo who makes sure. these claims pretty regularly sure. whenever there's a vaccine that needs to be smeared.
Vaccines cause IBS!
Sure.
Right, man. Okay.
So now Alex is there. He's rolling deep, though, with a crew.
Sure.
To quote BZ.
nicely done.
He's got Rob Dew.
It is Easter, so Jesus walks.
Uh-huh. Oh. So Rob Dew is in studio, the corporate representative Rob Dew.
Yes.
And he's just blown away by this document.
Rob Dew.
Yeah. So the parallels on this are just from when you looked at 9/11 and you saw the parallels that happened. This has got the same thing in it with like massive power outages. You've got a male and female president. The president who's a male stops after a few years, or it's the female she's only in for one term and then she leaves. And then the male president takes over. We kind of have that going on.
So first of all, Biden hasn't stepped down. So this isn't actually a similarity at all.
No, it's exactly like that. It's happening, though. You can see it.
I don't know if the InfoWars universe is just so convinced that it's going to happen any day now that they've just decided it's already happened.
Yeah, why not?
This is just a similarity in Rob's head. So in the scenario, the president is named Randall Archer. He'd previously been the vice president under Jacqueline Bennett. She didn't step down. She just decided not to run for a second term after being president from 2020 to 2024, at which point Archer ran and won.
Shouting, fuck you guys, you were shit.
Bennett is still actively involved in being an advisor, but was not up to seeking re-election, quote, due to health concerns. This is the case in the scenario because it creates an interesting dynamic where there's a new president, but also a fully functioning and intact staff at the Department of Health and Human Services. In terms of what the exercise is designed to explore, this makes total sense. Essentially, former President Bennett exists as a prop, so she can be a character that makes a media gaffe where she gives that noncommittal answer about Kalisevir.
Sure, sure.
The character that does that should be a beloved public figure, you know, because then it works. There's sure. a weird dynamic there.
Sure.
But it also shouldn't be the current president because that's too weird. So a former president works great. In order to make that scenario work, she would have to have just had one term, and ideally she shouldn't have just lost an election. Seems like the best way to get to that story beat would just be
she just didn't
want to seek re-election.
Everybody still trusts her.
Yeah.
So the gaffe would carry so much weight that yes. they would be influenced by it, while at the same time, you couldn't lose an election and have everybody be influenced
it would be weird.
Yeah.
And you don't want it to be the current president because it adds a whole layer to it.
Totally.
The other specific that Rob uses is this power outage, which I will admit is in the scenario. There's a massive power outage in the Pacific Northwest just 1 week prior to the rollout of the vaccine, which doesn't match up with what Rob wants it to in the real world.
Sure.
He's trying to compare that to the Texas outages, which happened well after vaccination programs began in our reality. Again, it's important to understand why this specific detail is included in the exercise. This is all about medical messaging in a public health emergency, so this power outage was added to the scenario so participants could consider what methods they might employ if they didn't have access to things like social media.
Sure.
With a massive power outage, one of the main methods of communications is less effective. But you need to continue helping the public through, so what do? This is super clear from the exercise if you read it, but if you just want to make random connections, I guess you could do what Rob Dew is doing, and it's really embarrassing. I mean, look, this is what it says in the text. Quote, all communication about the vaccine rollout was published in electronic form, and consequently, many individuals in the affected areas were initially unable to access information provided by state, local, and federal health authorities regarding CoronaVax dispensing.
Reasonable.
Immediately after this, there are study questions for the participants in the document, like, quote, while greater use of electronic media opens new opportunities for broad outreach, what communications vulnerabilities exist that could impede communication efforts via electronic media?
Sure.
Or the other question, quote, how can public health communicators remain flexible when multiple disasters occur at once?
Right.
In their paper about designing scenario-based exercises, Ogilvie and Schwartz discuss the need for stories that follow various plots, and one of the most common archetypes is crisis and response. This plot element is about introducing a big problem, and then the participants get to respond. The paper discusses an exercise they ran with Shell that followed basically this exact same path.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, first comes the scenario's crisis. Initial signs of environmental degradation lead reputable scientists to conclude that an environmental disaster is fast approaching.
Mm-hmm.
A few leading governments and companies change the way they do business. Disasters begin to occur in countries that could not or chose not to adapt, and there's public outcry. The playing field, the organizational operating environment, is suddenly dramatically altered. The innovative firms that learn to make difficult changes in their business practices to avoid environmental degradation are now positioned to become market leaders. In the Johns Hopkins exercise, the outbreak itself is the initial crisis. Then things like the power outage in the Pacific Northwest or the video of the kid vomiting represent new crises that the participants have to deal with. This is the context of what Alex and Rob are lying about, and it makes total sense. There's no way to read that document and not understand that that's what it is.
That's so funny to me that they missed the most important question of having that kind of power outage a week before the vaccine rollout, which would just be simply be like, okay, an astonishing number of people are going to think that God is punishing us for this vaccine. How do we deal with that?
Or are all the Proud Boys accounted for?
Yeah, is this witches? Uh-huh. People are going to ask us why God punished us with this power outage before the vaccine.
You know what? That isn't in the exercise, but I think
subtext.
Jordan, to be fair, it was made in 2017.
That's true.
If it was made today, that might have been irrelevant. Messaging question, okay. But yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, people are going to assume meteorologists are witches. What do we do about that from a health standpoint?
So it's interesting to me that, like, this is how Rob Dew's starting it out. He's talking about, like, these similarities. One is not a similarity at all in that Biden hasn't stepped down, and it doesn't, even if he did, it doesn't match the scenario that's depicted in the exercise.
Right.
And then the other one is that there's a power outage, but they're completely different situations.
Yeah.
And if you understand what the document is for, it makes total sense that a power outage would be in there.
Yeah.
It creates an important teaching moment about using non-electronic methods.
Every time Dew goes to a diner, he has failed the what are the three differences picture.
Oh, dude.
He's
never gotten one of those
cereal boxes, placemats. It doesn't
shut
matter.
Shut up. I just had a great idea.
Okay.
So have you ever played Overcooked?
Yes. We tried one time.
Yeah, it's that game where you have to cook meals, like you're running around chopping up an onion.
You
got to
do the thing. It's like Burger Boss or whatever it is.
I have a new idea.
Okay.
Dew's Diner.
Try and figure out puzzles that are way too easy.
No. It's Overcooked, but the goal is to fail. You just have to fail interestingly.
Yeah. I like that game. That's a good open-ended game.
Anybody who can program an app, don't waste your time on that.
Please don't.
So Alex gets to starting up reading the document, and this is fun. I love this.
Let's go ahead and begin here. Here is the project team who is on it. All these different top eugenicists, top globalists from around the country. John Hopkins, Bloomberg School of Public Health.
The team is top eugenicists, right? It's five senior associates with the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security.
Sure.
A professor from Texas State.
Naturally.
And a Master's of Public Health candidate from Columbia University.
Well, yeah. How do you get...
Top eugenicists.
How do you get any of those things without a proven track record of top eugenicism?
Alex has no idea who any of these people
Why
are.
Why would you?
Just making
Why
this up.
Why would you know who they are?
Oh, yeah. This master's student
what
is a fucking top
person
eugenicist.
Who doesn't directly affect... interact with these people, know who they
this
are.
This Columbia University grad student is a sixth generation eugenicist.
Sure.
So anyway, I warned you earlier that there was a squirrely weirdo coming up named Mike.
Mike the squirrely weirdo.
I honestly don't know who this dude is. I think he might be an InfoWars employee. He might be Harrison Smith's roommate.
Sure.
I don't fucking know.
Could be anybody.
But he is
wife's
weird.
Tennis instructor.
He is weird. Oh, and a liar.
Okay.
And this can be found inside of the SPARS document, word for word. After showing no adverse side effects for nearly a year, vaccine recipients slowly began to experience symptoms. As time passed and more people across the United States were vaccinated, claims of adverse side effects began to emerge. As the investigations grew in intensity, several high-ranking officials at the CDC and FDA were forced to step down and withdraw from government. They're setting up the health officials and the politicians to take the fall for this.
What Mike is reading here, that's definitely from the document, but he's made a classic InfoWars move here, and that he's taken two unrelated passages from the text and combined them, pretending they're about the same thing, in order to lie about this document.
Yeah.
The part about people experiencing side effects after a year is from chapter 17. It's on page 60. The second part about government officials stepping down is chapter 19. It's on page 67. It's completely unrelated to the previous chapter's conversation about possible side effects. Here is the paragraph about the government officials in full. Quote, after action reports, government hearings, and agency reviews following the pandemic were too numerous to count. Emergency funding appropriated by Congress to fight the disease became available partway through the course of the pandemic, but federal, state, and local public health agencies struggled to manage the procedural requirements to spend it.
That does sound familiar.
As a result, significant amounts of emergency funds remained unused as the pandemic wound down. As the investigations grew in intensity, several high-ranking officials at the CDC and FDA were forced to step down and withdraw from government in order to, quote, spend more time with their families. The investigations that are causing
that
these
sounds familiar.
These investigations that are causing these imaginary officials to step down are not related to possible drug side effects. It's clearly about mismanagement of funds. If this guy's read the document as he's presenting himself as having done, then he knows fully well that the two passages he just read as if they were one paragraph are actually two completely different sections of the document. If this document actually said what he wanted it to, he wouldn't have to lie like this in order to make it look like it met his needs.
Yeah.
This is bullshit, weirdo Mike.
Yeah, that is funny that even in the Johns Hopkins report, it's like, listen, we all know at least 15 to 20 senators are corrupt as shit. We're just going to put in that some of them had to quit.
I mean, I think that the scenario paints a very realistic portrait of some of the things that you could expect might happen.
Absolutely.
We'll deal with another one of them that Rob Dew thinks is maybe wizardry a little bit later. But I don't know. From reading the document, I think there's some pretty fair assumptions that are made. And then also some ones that are like, that's a little silly.
Yeah.
But they're all in service of what the document is for.
Right. They're teaching documents.
It's all still focused around this exercise that is how do medical communicators rise to various challenges.
Right.
Now, I think that that clip right there where Mike is reading two different sections as if they were the same, because when he's talking about these side effects, he then says, as investigations grow in intensity.
Yes.
And that's meant to lead the audience to
very
think that these investigations
split those quotes, but then combine them together to form a single quote.
Right, which leads you to believe that the investigations are about drug side effects.
Naturally.
And that's how they're going to set up the politicians to take the fall for this.
Right.
Has nothing to do with that. He has to know that. And this is the point at which any reasonable person would just be like, fuck this.
Yeah.
You're absolutely misrepresenting the primary document you're talking about. And there's no way that that is an accident. There's no way you did this accidentally.
Well, I mean, it's somewhat similar to Alex's synopsis of Romeo and Juliet insofar as he leaves out a bunch of the middle between those two things.
No, it's not. No.
No, I know.
It would be like if he threw in a little bit of Hamlet.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That sounds fun.
So anyway, Mike gets to being weird some more about a passage about vaccine distribution.
Sure.
To determine how to best distribute limited doses of Coronavax to members of priority groups across the country, the U.S. government resorted to new controversial tactics, notably having healthcare providers access patients' electronic health records to determine the number of individuals in high-risk populations receiving care in particular areas.
This passage really undercuts the argument that this document represents the globalist plan, because they didn't do that. Also, while we're on the subject of things that didn't happen in real life that do happen in the scenario, we should look at chapter 10 and see one of the big, gigantic, I'm going to come up with more words, one of the big public messaging crises that come up over the course of the exercise.
Gojira emerged from the ocean.
No, that's chapter 12.
Oh, okay, okay.
In chapter 10 of the scenario, there's a huge public backlash because doctors and nurses aren't included in the highest priority group for the distribution of the vaccine.
Yeah, that would cause a huge public backlash.
Yeah, they even designed two fake tweets that illustrate the outrage that was happening in the medical worker communities. There's a strike in Milwaukee among healthcare providers when they won't go to work unless they're made a vaccine priority.
Yeah.
And none of that happened in life.
Yeah, no, that's a totally reasonable thing for them to do were that unreasonable thing to occur.
Sure.
Yeah.
Also in the scenario, there's a groundswell of college activism taking place in the social media app that's created for this exercise called Unequal. From the exercise, quote, another group that was not generally affected by the government's Coronavax promotion efforts were college students, especially those attending school on the East and West Coasts. Public health officials had no explanation for the lack of vaccine uptake among this population until protests began at several college campuses, including UC Berkeley, the University of Washington, Reed College, Harvard, and the University of Chicago. The focus of these protests was the lack of access to Coronavax, particularly for populations in less developed countries like Haiti, Guatemala, and Cameroon. The college students involved declared that they would not accept Coronavax until it was made available in terms of both access and expense to everyone in the world who wanted it.
Right.
This, too, did not happen in the real world.
Right. Yeah.
The reason these events are included in the scenario is the same as anything that is in there. They present an opportunity for the participants to wrestle with challenges in the field of medical messaging. None of it's real, but it portrays situations that are close enough to seeming real for them to be effective in role-playing situations.
Yeah.
And that's enough for Alex to think that it's all secretly real.
Yeah, I mean, it seems fun whenever these studies predict events that do wind up occurring, because you're like, ooh, look at how good those predictions are. But it's really just based on the shit we've already seen that's going to almost certainly happen again, because people don't learn lessons from things exactly like the thing that we're writing now.
Mm. So Mike is a weirdo, I've decided.
Yeah.
And he reads this passage. And again, like if normal people would have checked out already, but I'm not normal. I still want to hear more.
I mean, this gets worse, Alex. Severe side effects, including swollen legs, severe joint pain, and encephalitis potentially resulting in seizures, seizure disorders, or death occasionally occurred, word for word, from the document.
Everything now happening in mass. Mm-hmm. We got to add all the B-roll to that. That's okay.
So what Mike is failing to mention here is the passage he's reading is about the side effects. It's not for the Coronavax human vaccine. It's from the section about the vaccine for animals. There's an added bit of comedy in that he's reading a quote from a fake email that the scenario created in order to depict an exchange of information about an animal vaccine. And then Mike's dumbass is pretending it's a document talking about human side effects. Just amazing.
That is real, real bummer town level shit.
Here's what he read in context, what the actual thing says. Quote, in 2021, a coronavirus caused an outbreak in Region 7, parenthetically Southeast Asia, in the hoofed mammal populations. Our researchers developed and produced in-house an effective vaccine against the infection. Its subsequent approval and use successfully ended the outbreak in the region. While largely effective in preventing infection, severe side effects, including swollen legs, severe joint pain, and encephalitis, potentially resulting in seizures, seizure disorder, or death, occasionally occurred. Given the millions of vaccinations required for Region 7, this resulted in measurable losses in the animal population. This is critical to understand. If this document actually said what these dum-dums were claiming it was, they wouldn't resort to tactics like this. This is so manipulative.
Yeah.
It's nonsense.
This is bullshit.
If it were truly a smoking gun, they'd just be able to read it. They wouldn't have to pretend that they were reading this fake email from the document as if it's a real thing about a human vaccine.
Yeah, what's the it's point ridiculous. Of having these things if you're just going to highlight, like, one paragraph from every other chapter and then just combine them into a single double-spaced page?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, why? Yeah, fuck off.
So Mike reads a passage about conspiracy theories that go around.
Sure.
And Alex
sure.
gets so excited that he has to read it himself.
Oh, boy.
I think it's because he's like, I want to maybe use a cut of me saying this later, mm-hmm. like in a John Bowne report.
Right.
And I don't want to have this weirdo reading
right,
it.
Right.
I want it to be in my voice.
Right.
Conspiracy theories also proliferated across social media, suggesting that the virus had been purposely created and introduced to the population by drug companies, or that it had escaped from a government lab secretly testing bioweapons. This is in 2017, right after Fauci says a virus will be released. It's going to happen. It's going to challenge Trump. It's going to be a surprise operation.
Fauci didn't say that. In the speech that he was given, we've talked about this. He was talking about how every administration deals with an unforeseen health crisis.
He said that conspiracy theories would abound that it would escape from a government lab. Just 20 years after Alex started saying that every 4 months.
Yeah. That's the other thing, too. Yeah. It's like we listened to that 2003 episode. Now it's just saying foot and mouth came out of port and down.
Yeah, the same thing. It's like, of course they would add that scenario in there. That's what you do.
That's one of the things that's like, oh, this is giving texture to the world.
Exactly.
And it's not even a major point. That's not even like...
It's just mentioned.
Yeah. And it's after the fact.
Right.
It's after the entire course of the outbreak happens in terms of the document.
Call me when conspiracy theorists in this paper decide to inspire people to overthrow the country.
So, Mike, I mean, look, some of this stuff, I don't know. Like, someone who's really generous might be able to say he's just sloppy.
Sure.
But there's intention behind the misrepresentations he's presenting.
I
don't believe that he did this by accident.
Someone incredibly generous, neither of which are we.
No.
Yeah.
Also, I think I heard this and I got really worried.
This took me 2 weeks to read, by the way. The wording, it weaves everything together. So you're like, what is going on? Is this an exercise? Is this real? I was just trying to do the best job I can to extract everything. So if you had 5 minutes, you could just understand what's happening.
Oh my
bad.
God. Oh
bad.
My God.
Super bad.
Oh my God.
Some things require more than 5 minutes. That's a good thing.
Sure, sure. I can't imagine taking 2 weeks and then coming away with that sort of sewn together quotation that misrepresents the point. I don't understand, too, like being able to look at this and not be able to understand fairly quickly what it is. Like, I understand if you see it out of context, completely out of context,
sure,
it could be confusing for a
sure.
bit. But if you sat
if perhaps
down,
you only had 5 minutes to hear about it.
Sure. But if you sat down and actually read a couple pages,
right,
like it explains the exercise at the beginning.
Course.
It explains I don't know. It
starts with, "Dear Alex Jones, please, we're explaining the exercise. You literally can't use this for your propaganda."
I really don't understand the idea of anyone sitting with this for an hour, let alone 2 weeks.
Jesus.
And coming away with any confusion about, oh, also there is a disclaimer that Alex shouldn't use this. Let me read this. Quote, "This is a hypothetical scenario designed to illustrate the public health risk communication challenges that could potentially emerge during a naturally occurring infectious disease outbreak requiring development and distribution of a novel and or investigational drugs, vaccines, therapeutics, or other medical countermeasures. The infectious pathogen..." Oh, I just did an Alex.
Ooh.
"The infectious pathogen, medical countermeasures, characters, news media excerpts, social media posts, and government agency responses described herein are entirely fictional."
Yeah.
So there is a disclaimer.
Yeah.
But that does not stop these dorks.
Doesn't sound like it. Dan, it's about what they're not saying.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's like jazz.
Yeah, exactly.
So here's Mike. 2 weeks of study.
2 weeks of intense study.
And now he's going to bring back up this power outage.
Okay.
"A week before Coronavax was released for distribution in the United States, the power grid at the Grand Coulee Dam in eastern Washington State experienced a catastrophic failure. While the event did not destroy any infrastructure or result in any deaths, it did cause widespread power outages in Washington, Oregon, Idaho, Montana, and British Columbia. Though power was restored within a day of the initial outage, blackouts continued plaguing these areas over the next 3 weeks.
And now, a resurgence of the banned widespread panic.
Why would they put that in a vaccine exercise? Because they're all behind all this.
They're showing off to their people. Keep going.
Yeah.
So Mike seems so confused by why they would include something about a power outage in this document about a medical situation. But if he'd actually read it, he shouldn't be confused. It's literally spelled out in the exercise. This is very clearly to get participants to consider how to be effective in getting messaging out in a real non-digital world. From the scenario, quote, state and local public health officials scrambled to hand deliver flyers printed and copied at local emergency operations centers using backup generators to explain vaccine prioritization and POD information. This extremely time-consuming effort exhausted the public health workforce already stretched thin by the epidemic response and several years of budget cuts, but it was ultimately successful. Early vaccination rates in Washington, Oregon, and Idaho were very similar to other states and in some cases above average. In spite of this success, the incident underscored the shortcomings associated with relying solely on electronic communication strategies. That, what I just read to you, is immediately after the part he was reading.
Yeah, it makes it very clear. There's almost impossible to misunderstand.
Yes. There's no way to believe that he took 2 weeks to read this and couldn't understand what the point was. This is either someone who's deeply disturbed and needs help, needs like mental help.
Yeah.
Or he's a willful liar. And I'm more inclined to believe it's the latter.
Yeah. I mean, this is not a generous interpretation, but the idea of these people reading a document that tells them what it says absolutely does confuse them, like on a deep level.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they can't just be like, oh, like that's not a thing they can do. They can't read an explanation of what's happening and right. go, oh, well, they're being honest with me.
I understand
you
that.
Know?
I understand that dynamic.
Right.
Now, if they weren't copy and pasting various parts of the document
See,
in order
that.
To create a misrepresentation of what it says.
Sure.
If they weren't pretending that side effects in animals were actually humans, like if they weren't doing stuff like that, then maybe I would be like, oh, this is just suspiciousness run amok.
Yeah.
But there is work that's been done in order to misrepresent this document.
Not 2 weeks worth, but
no.
There has been work done.
No.
Yeah.
Now, Jordan, Rob Dew. He's about to have his mind blown. Man, this document.
Okay.
It's crazy. Let's go to the next one. You look at the similarity to the names. SPARS, COVID. And then we have SARS-CoV-2. Okay? Almost same exact name. And they wrote this 4 years before.
They added a number and they just added a P. They added a P and a V.
Exactly. It's really crazy.
Where's the V?
It's almost like scientists aren't interested too much in different naming conventions when it comes to viruses, and instead it's almost a classification.
Yeah.
Yeah.
SPARS, it means St. Paul Acute Respiratory Syndrome Coronavirus, which is similar to SARS-CoV-2. Yeah, sure. The reason that this is it's named after the city that it popped up in.
Yeah.
And the reason that it is that, and we've had this whole thing about not naming things after places, is because that whole thing is a World Health Organization convention, that you don't name something after the city
exactly.
or the location where it came up. And the World Health Organization isn't involved in this exercise.
Because that would give a massive incentive for people to be like, never fuck with those people ever
again. Don't go to St. Paul.
Exactly.
Plus, this was in 2017, which is fairly shortly after the World Health Organization changed its best practices about that whole thing. So there may have been some lingering confusion about naming conventions.
Sure.
I almost guarantee that if the World Health Organization had made this scenario, it probably would have named the condition SARS-CoV-2. And like Rob Dew would have a heart attack.
Yeah, no, he would shit.
Yeah.
He would just shit.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I might shit.
Yeah. It is not weird.
No.
At all.
No, it's a convention. It's a naming convention. It's like a fucking taxonomy.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, it's like kingdom, phylum,
In terms of like a conspiracy theory, this is the one that rises to the level of,
yeah,
How about that?
Their names are, that's how they name stuff.
Yep. There's another connection with the real world, though.
Do they want them to name viruses like they do hurricanes? Like, this is Virus Maria? Is that what they would feel better about?
Maybe.
Well.
So Rob brings up another thing in this this next clip that is kind of similar to real world.
Then we have the inflated fatality estimates. Initially, they write in the scenario, CDC fatality rate, almost 5%. WHO fatality rate, 14.5%. And then the fatality rate of over 64 is 50%.
This is fair. The inflated death estimates are in the scenario, but they're there for a few reasons. The first is that the scenario is supposed to depict reality, and the reality of dealing with a completely new disease is that sometimes you get some things off. One of the main reasons is actually spelled out in the document, if you read it. Quote, at the outset of the SPARS outbreak, physicians' understanding of the disease stemmed primarily from extremely severe cases resulting in pneumonia or hypoxia that required hospitalization and extensive medical treatment. Mild cases of the disease, which produced symptoms including cough, fever, headaches, and malaise, were often perceived as the flu by people who had them and consequently often went untreated and undiagnosed by medical personnel. As a result, early case fatality estimates were inflated. This is a real dynamic that we've seen play out in the COVID-19 outbreak, but it's been true in other past outbreaks as well.
Yeah.
The issue is that you can't always assume that it's going to be the case, or else you're putting yourself in a position to get blindsided by a super deadly condition that you happen to underestimate.
Yeah.
It's far better to be overcautious with new diseases than to just let them go and see what happens.
Again, this is what we talked about. Like, diseases have killed almost all of us.
Yeah, be careful.
We should be crazy.
Be careful.
Yeah.
So the other reason that this is in the document is because it's made as an exercise for medical communicators. And what could be a greater communication challenge than having been wrong initially? The study question for this section is, quote, how can health authorities best meet public demands for critical information, such as what is the health threat and what do I know about it, when the crisis is still unfolding and not all the facts are known? If you understand this in the context it was written and used, all the things that they're trying to create paranoia about just sound fucking stupid.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It is awesome. Dude, this next thing that they try and make a conspiracy out of, holy shit, these guys are dumb.
Sell me on it.
Let's go to the antivirals is the next slide. In this scenario, they have one called Calosevir. All right? Ends in an IR. Side effects, nausea, headaches, vomiting, and body aches. There's actually a viral video of a boy in this scenario taking the Calosevir and then immediately projectile vomiting everywhere.
Yeah, they even have videos of their scenario.
It's crazy.
And then, but go back to it, then 3 years later, it's Remdesivir.
Look, and this is not the real name. This is the name they gave it later. It's actually got a different name
And remember, they said Remdesivir was this new experimental thing they just developed.
Exactly.
But they had the damn name 3 years before.
Same side effects, nausea, constipation.
They only change a few letters. It's all about rubbing in their faces.
It is. They really do.
Folks, this is smoking gun.
If these dudes cared at all, they could learn why these drugs have similar names.
They could learn so much.
Yeah, these are generic names for the drug, which is to say they're not brand names.
Right.
The convention for naming generic drugs is to have the suffix of the word indicate what the drug is. For instance, antiviral drugs generally end in the suffix VIR for viral. This isn't universal, but most of them end up with this, and that's why these two do.
Sure.
You know, you go down the list of antiviral.
Right.
And then also, like, penicillin-derived drugs have cillin, like amoxicillin.
Right.
It's how drugs are named.
It's very simple. Yeah. And it's done that way on purpose to be simple, so people don't have to, no.
The people making the scenario were striving to fill it with realistic details, so they followed accepted conventions for naming the drug they made up in it. Alex and Rob Dew are so stupid and so addicted to thinking coincidences mean something that they take that as a sign that the document is mocking them. This is nuts.
Yeah, it's like just such a... Just don't talk and just scream repeatedly, I refuse to learn anything!
Yeah, it's outrageous.
Yeah.
Oh, they both end in IR.
I refuse! I refuse to read the first page of Google!
They just changed a few letters.
You could type any of these questions into Google and the first result would tell you what...
Yeah, it's really easy to understand
it's
these things.
It's so easy.
So... This clip is just where everything turns to parody. Rob is in the middle of complaining about, like, medical ads and
stuff.
Yeah, and then you have the native ads, which are put out by the vaccine company saying the vaccine's safe and effective. And that's all they do.
Vitamin Mineral Fusion is a remarkable product, and it's back in stock, 40% off at InfoWarsStore.com right now.
It's almost,
don't do that to me.
It's almost
don't
like do that whoever edited this did that
it
as
on
a
purpose.
Joke.
Yeah, that's just too much.
He's complaining about like medical ads.
That is too much.
And then in the middle of it,
it's safe. These people, all they do is put out these ads that say things are safe and effective. Anyways, let's go to a commercial of Alex saying that his stuff is safe and effective.
Oh wow,
wow.
So yeah, they've gone a while now, and Alex realizes.
We did it.
We have not done it.
Oh, no.
We're all humans. We're all people that care about freedom. I get upset. Rob gets upset. As we spend weeks studying this, we finally get on air, and it's so upsetting. We've covered 10% of what's in front of us. Every bit of this is just as insane or more insane. I haven't even gotten to the part where they admit they're doing this to kill you and save the earth. I mean, they admit they're doing this.
That part is not in the document.
They specifically say they're not doing this.
Although that would introduce a very interesting medical messaging challenge.
That would be an interesting medical challenge. Okay, let's say in this scenario, our secret plan has gotten out. And gotten into the hands of the least reliable and credulous person.
Now what do we
do? You can have. What do we do?
Yeah.
Let it go?
I guess.
Yeah.
Hit the panic button. So yeah, this is where I checked out.
Like, yeah, that's a good place to check out.
Well, no, this next clip. Actually.
Oh, okay.
I should have checked out whenever Weird Mike was doing that stuff about the cut and paste job that
naturally,
he did.
Naturally.
That's when you have like, all right, your credibility's out the window.
Gone.
I got to get out of here.
Gone.
But that's not what this show is about. This show is about giving too many chances.
Okay.
And here's where I was like, Alex, go fuck yourself.
Spend a few minutes just in summation of the bombshells that have been released here. I mean, to me, the strongest thing is the drug name's the same before a drug even exists. The virus name the same before they release it. Them running the lab. I mean, this is smoking gun. One in 85 trillion quadrillion.
Wow. So the thing that is so convincing for Alex is that there's similarities in the name of... Yeah. SARS-CoV and SARS-CoV-2, and the name of two antiviral drugs end in the same suffix. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is nothing.
Yep.
This is outrageous. Alex started promoting this on Thursday, and this is the best he can do on Sunday or on Saturday.
Wow.
It's offensive to professionalism.
What blew me away was that naming conventions can be used in a fictitious scenario also.
Yeah.
I never would have imagined that these people would have done something so insane as to stick to basic borderline universally standardized naming conventions.
I'd listened to over an hour of this Saturday thing that they were doing, and then Alex said that, and then Rob Dew brought up, they use some of the same hashtags and fake tweets that they have on there that people used in real life. I said, I gotta go.
Nope.
Don't care.
Nope. Throwing things.
Nope.
Immediate throwing of things.
That means nothing.
Immediate throwing of things.
Yeah. So anyway, I got really excited because, I think after our last present day episode, I was in the doldrums. I felt bad.
Sure.
I did not care for Alex's very weird defense of Matt Gaetz.
And this was a promise of a primary source.
And no. I mean, that's what we found eventually.
Yeah, of course.
But Jordan, I mean, like, we were, we talked over the weekend and I was telling you, like, I really think that, we've got to stay in the present for Sunday. I think Alex is probably going to have something. Yeah.
He's going to have something.
I thought for sure this Matt Gaetz thing would continue. As Matt Gaetz has had more information come out, it looks worse and worse.
Right.
I thought that Alex would either have to double down and triple down, or he'd have to cut bait. I didn't know what he was going to do. And so I was like, well, I think in the interest of keeping people up to date on the goings on of this, and then I dig in, and here we are.
Here we go.
We got a new lockstep document, and it's nice because I think sometimes one of the things I enjoy the most about doing this show is the opportunity to understand something like this document that causes such fear for people.
Yeah,
like to be able to see this Freddy Krueger on paper.
Right. Right.
And understand it for what it is, and understand like some of the very interesting lessons that actually could have been learned, and you know, that people are doing these kinds of exercises that,
yeah,
that they probably did pay dividends.
Yeah.
Like, we probably didn't see enough of the lessons learned.
Sure.
But on a granular level, in terms of some people being able to better deal with the challenges that came up over the course of this pandemic,
right,
this probably helped a lot.
Right. Yeah.
And I appreciate that. I like getting that glimpse.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a little bit like if Jamie Lee Curtis was running away from Michael Myers the whole time, and then at the end it was like, lady, I've been trying to deliver you this letter from 15 years ago.
I've been served.
Hanging on to it. Yeah, that whole thing. I'm just like, this was a complete waste of time for everyone involved. Why are we here?
I honestly enjoy having my time wasted like this far more than
I enjoy most
of present-day Alex Jones, though.
Like, at least you're having fun running away from Michael Myers, sure. You know? You're not just sitting at your home being like, this is a waste of time.
I'm getting a jog in.
Yeah, exactly. I'm getting some calories burning.
Yeah.
I'm getting that cardio. Yeah. It's good stuff.
So, thank you, Alex. I don't look forward to him constantly bringing up this document.
Nope.
Because it's a big old zero.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, whenever these things happen, it's often good for us to spend time looking at it before it gets too out of control.
Too boring, yeah.
Oh, no, because I think that this is something that definitely could stand to have traction in other communities or conspiracy spaces.
Possible, so, yeah.
Hopefully Tucker covers it.
Yeah, that'd be funny. That would be funny. Oh, boy.
Anyway, we'll be back, Jordan.
Will we?
Yeah, we will. But until then, we have a website.
We do have a website. It's knowledgefight.com.
You bet. We're also on Twitter.
We are on Twitter. It's at knowledgefight. Go to bed, Jordan.
We're also on the fake social media app from the scenario Unequal.
We are on Unequal. And if you'd like to tell us Unequal, and if you could please find a local charity or bail fund in your area to help out people doing God's work right now.
We'll be back. But until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I'm Daryl Rundis.
So what do you think about them apples?
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.